ourselves on this day of Avelut for Am Yisrael.
When the Torah describes the result of the report of the spies, it tells us initially of the report which spoke in a positive way about the land and the fruit, but made a cold, calculated decision that entering the land would be difficult, if not impossible. Kalev responds, of course, that we can. After this initial discussion, the other so-called Meraglim begin to attack the land. They attack the land itself. The Torah tells us, Hotzi Diba. They said things that were not true about the land. And at this point they say the land itself is not a good land. It's a land which swallows its inhabitants. And this second speech apparently had its desired results. So we read the first source in Perek Yudalid, in the beginning. Batisa kol ha'ida v'yitnu et kolam V'yivku ha'am b'layla hahu. The entire community arose and raised their voices, and the people wept that night. The object of their tears, the way it's recorded in Sefer Bamidbar, V'yilinu al Moshe v'al Aharon kol b'nei Yisrael, V'yomru aleim kol ha'ida lumatnu be'eretz Mitzrayim v'bamidbar hazeh lumatnu. They complain against Moshe, they complain against Aaron, and they say, had they only died, they only died in Egypt, or they only died in the desert. V'lama shemeviu tanu la'aretz hazot, and why is God bringing us? And then they go and they spell out the calamity, which God forbid would befall them. And finally they say, maybe we need new leadership, and we can return to Egypt. And the truth is, after listening to the report of the spies, we can understand why the people took this so harshly. The Gemara in Source 2 in Ta'anit tells us, "B'tish'a ba'av nigzar al avoteinu shlo yikansu la'aretz, uchtiv v'tisa kol eida v'inu et kolam v'yivku ha'am b'laylahu." The Gemara tells us that on the 9th of Av, it was then decided the Jews would not enter into the land. And it says the Jews cried that night. V'amar Rabba, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Oto halayla leil tisha b'av haya. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Atem b'chitem b'chiyah shel chinam, Ani ekbal lachem b'chiyah l'dorot. And God says, you cried for nothing. As many parents will then say, I'll give you something to cry about. But we don't immediately understand why future generations should be impacted. Furthermore, we don't understand what exactly was so bad about that crying. Both the Maharal, later expanded by the Chafetz Chaim, who took it to a whole other level, they understand that the main problem over here is the problem that the spies were guilty of, and that was the Diba, that was the Lashon Hara. Source 3, the Maharal writes, V'odnit be'er mesechet erichin, mashra'ui leva Lashon Hara hachrita, u'befrat kasher hutziu Diba la'aretz, במקום אשר הוא ישיבתן ונטייתן, והיו בוכים בחייה של חינם שלא להיכנס לארץ בשביל לשון הרע של מרגלים, נקבע להם בחייה לדורות. that because of the crying that resulted from the Lashon Hara, that's why they couldn't go into the land. But we're not exactly clear what's the relationship between this crying and between the Lashon Hara. The Chafetz Chaim, who wrote a whole book on Lashon Hara, says, Source 4, Va'od kol sibat golutenu ata hu ha'ikar rak bishvil maseh hamaraglim. The long exile that lasted 2,000 years, and the fact that the Beit HaMikdash is still not built, all goes back to the Meraglim. This idea is echoed, and I'm going to continue, don't go far away from Source 4. It's echoed in Source 9, where the Beit HaLevi says, Rav Yosef Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik, Rabbi Soloveitchik's great-grandfather and namesake, Kishamanu Chirpaz Yudzain B'Tamuz Shenasa Egel. We skipped a little bit. Zetishabav Sheshavu Maraglim Kibo Zarim Al Mikdashi Hashem Zechurban Rishon VeChurban Sheni Dahinu Shnei Churbanot Hayu Mishorshei Shnei Achoteim Eile Bayit Rishon Hayam Minitzutz Chet Egel Ubayit Shnei Hayam Bivchinat Chet Maraglim Ukamoshnit Bayer. He tells us that the Churban of Bayit Rishon was because of the sin of the Egel, the sin of the golden calf, while Churban Bayit Sheni is because of the Meraglim. This is what the Chafetz Chaim told us in source number 4 as well, but he focuses it, because what actually was the sin of the Meraglim? They spoke against Eretz Yisrael. But continuing in source 4 on the bottom, it says, She'ikar chet ha-meraglim haya lashon hara. The main sin of the Meraglim was in their speech. She'utziu diba la'aretz, where they claimed that the land was a terrible land. And because the people cried then for nothing, it was determined that they would cry in every generation. The Chafetz Chaim says this even stronger in Source 5. Ach levesof yimei bayit sheni gavra sinat chinam ulashon hara b'neinu. And by the destruction of the Second Temple, there was both sinat chinam and lashon hara. And I want to point something out. We've seen the Maharal and we've seen the Chafetz Chaim talk about lashon hara, and we see the Meraglim speak about lashon hara. What we don't see is what we have received by tradition as being the main reason for the Churban, and that's sinat chinam. Where is sinat chinam in the story of the spies? Lashon hara, yes. Rejecting the land of Israel, absolutely. Perhaps mistakes in values, clearly. But where do we see sinat chinam? So over here, the Chafetz Chaim works very hard, and he tells us that in reality, lashon hara and sinat chinam are the same. Because what is it that makes us speak about other people if it were not sinat chinam? In Source 5, Ach levesof yimei bayit sheni, we read that part. And he says, we'll skip the line, Gemar niktash sinat chinam hakavanahu alashon haragam kein shiotzeit mitzad hasinah. That even though the Gemara says sinat chinam, the Gemara really means lashon hara. And the truth is, we could defend this point. Not that the Chafetz Chaim needs our defense. It's a defendable point. But we would expect it to be a bit sharper. The Shla, who says lots of things together here, Source 6, the Shla Kadosh, he's describing and discussing the battle between Yaakov and Esav, where it says the Avak, the dust, went up into heaven. He gives a number of interpretations for Avak. So the first thing he tells us that Avak Gematria Egel, the Gematria, the value of Avak and Egel, they have the same value. Then he goes on, he says, Rapirish Hasheni Shu Lashon Avak, Romez Achit Bayit Sheni Sinat Chinam Shabam Lashon Hara. So again, that idea that we find in the Chafetz Chaim is found earlier in the Shla Kadosh, where he tells us it's really the same. V'amu Chazal, very depressing statement about society. Ruban Begezel, most of us are guilty of stealing. Mi'ut Ba'arayot, a small percentage are guilty of sexual sins, v'hakol ba'avak lashon hara. And everyone's guilty of at least a little bit of lashon hara. Avak is the dust of lashon hara. V'zeh chet bayit sheni. That was the sin of bayit sheni. L'shlach kadosh shnei l'chot abrit. His name was Horovitz. And if your name is Horovitz and you come from his family, then you shouldn't be eating turkey. That was in his last will. Don't ask me about who people are, or you'll get more things like that. He then continues and he says, what does this mean? Ve'avak, ve'avek, vai'avak, tzavach. It was a scream. Vai al avak, woe because of the avak. And then he says, the avak is Rosh Tevot, akamtza ubar kamtza. Ki sinat chinam ze, garam l'chorban bayit, Beit HaMikdash kedi'ita begitin. So the Shla over here you see, and again, the Chafetz Chaim doesn't need my defense, and the Shla doesn't need my haskama, but the Shla is very clever. He's very clever and he sees within the battle of Yaakov and Esav, he sees elements there of destruction. He sees the wounding of Yaakov connected to the destruction of the Second Temple, and he sees Lashon Hara, which he identifies with Sinat Chinam. But I am going to have the same complaint again. Things aren't sharp enough. The Ramban almost asks this question. He asks a different question. The Ramban is bothered by not just where is the Sinat Chinam. He wants to know where in the entire episode do we find that this is going to have reverberations for future generations. Which means this generation was guilty. If you want to say they were guilty of Lashon Hara, the truth is that starts off with despise themselves. If you want to say they rejected the land of Israel, they got their punishment. They remained in the desert for 40 years. But where do we see in this entire episode the Bichya L'dorot? We also weren't exactly sure where we saw the Bichya, which was L'chinam, that they cried for nothing. Why did they cry? They cried because they were afraid that they would be annihilated. That's not a bad reason to cry. And again, we saw in the Gemara, you guys cried for nothing, I'll give you something to cry about. So the Ramban over here asks, in source 7, we'll come back to that in a second. They murmured, they complained in their tents. And the Ramban says, he goes, but where do they get this from? Where is the Bichya L'dorot? Where is this found in this episode? But the Ramban knew Tanakh. He clearly didn't go to the average men's yeshiva. Even though this pasuk is quoted in Medrash that he could have quoted, so maybe that's how he knew it. Avo mikra molehu, and he quotes the verses in Tehillim. And just go down a little bit to the next source to see what he's quoting from. In Tehillim 106, Kuvav, it says, Ya'asu egel bechorev v'yishtachavu l'masecha. They made a calf at Sinai, and they bowed down to an image. Vayumiru et kvodam bitavnit shor ochel esev. And they traded in their honor for an image of a bull, something which eats grass, and that was only if that bull was alive. Shechachu el Moshiam, they forgot the God who had saved them, and so on. God wanted to destroy them, and I'm skipping a little bit. And then we get to Pasuk Kafhei. Ve'yiragnu ba'oholehem lo shem'u b'kol Hashem. And they murmured in their tents, and they did not listen to the voice of God. Ve'yisai yado lehem la'pil otom b'midbar. And God lifted his hand to make them die in the wilderness. U'la'pil zar'am b'goyim u'luzarotam ba'artzot. And to make their seed fall among the nations, and to scatter in the lands. So here in Sefer Tehillim, when it comes back to the sin of the generation of the spies, not only does it tell us that they murmured in their tents and therefore God had them all die in the desert, it also says over here that in future generations they would be exiled and scattered among the nations. So here we have at least the beginning of understanding of why there is what we would call a bichiyal dorot for future generations, but we're still lacking the major point. And what's that? Where's the sinat chinam? So if we look at source number 12, we find a verse that if you paid attention, you heard yesterday. Vatiragnu ba'ohalechem. Over here the translation is you grumbled. Because grumbled is even better than murmured. You grumbled in your tents. Vatomru, and you said, Bisinat Hashem otanu hotzi'anu me'eretz Mitzrayim. That God took us out of Egypt because he hates us. And therefore he put us, latet otanu biyad emori ulahashmidenu. God put us in the hands of the Amorite to be destroyed. Here is the only time we find in this entire explanation the words hatred, sin'ah. Rashi reveals to us the terrible tragedy. Bisinat Hashem otanu. Source 13, V'hu haya ohev etchem, but God loved you. Aval atem son'im oto, you hated God. And over here, Rashi precedes Freud and tells us about projection. What he tells us is that Am Yisrael in their tents that night are afraid, but their fear leads them to a very strange place. Their fear leads them to the conclusion that God hates them. And somehow, everything which has happened up to this point has been forgotten. And the reality, of course, Rashi tells us, God loved and loves the Jewish people. But we're there feeling hatred towards God and project that God actually hates us. Here we find sinat chinam in the story of the Meraglim. Here we find hatred, which is totally chinam, without any reason, without any justification, quite the opposite. God took us out of slavery, performed miracles, split the sea, gave us the Torah, and was leading us to the promised land. And our leaders told us that we couldn't make it. And everything falls apart. This is sinat chinam. When the Gemara draws the conclusion that it was Sinat Chinam that destroyed the second Beit HaMikdash, we still need to find the core. This is the core. But I have another question. Where do we find the core or the root of this type of projection? The fact that you should feel something and then project it onto someone else. Is that itself related to this whole story of the spies? And the answer is yes. In source 14, when the spies come back, which actually if you had a chumash open instead of these sources, you would notice is the verse immediately preceding the verse of their crying. It tells us, V'sham ra'inu at ha'nefilim, b'nei anak min ha'nefilim, u'nehi b'einenu k'chagavim, v'gam hayinu b'einehem. They saw these giant, giant creatures. But what's their conclusion? We were like grasshoppers compared to them. We were like grasshoppers in their eyes. So let me ask you a question. How did they know that they were like grasshoppers in their eyes? So there are a number of commentaries and midrashim that work very hard to try to work this out. But I will insist that that's not the pshat. The pshat is they are lying. The pshat is they are exaggerating. The pshat is this is what they feel. They felt. So perhaps you'll tell me it's not really lying because it's saying what they think is the truth. But where they felt very, very small. They felt incapable. They felt inadequate. They felt there was no way for them to possibly capture the land. And therefore they said, we were like grasshoppers in their eyes. Here we find projection from the spies, and right afterwards we find the result of this is that the whole generation felt very small. The whole generation felt incapable. The whole generation started to cry. And the whole generation felt, there's no way that we can do this. And if we can't do this, then why did God take us here? Obviously, God took us here because He hates us. And we realize that something went terribly wrong. But here we find the core of the sin'at chinam on the one hand, and here we find the core of this negative projection on the other hand. It may or may not be related, but later on when we do get a report of how the soon-to-be-conquered nations look at Israel, we find a very different report. We don't find them telling us, oh, these Jews, they look like a bunch of grasshoppers, we'll squash them. What do we find instead? Vayar balak ben sipor et kol asher asa Yisrael le'emori. Vayigar moav b'nei ha'am od, ki rav hu. Vayakatz moav b'nei b'nei Yisrael. Vayom moav el zeknei b'yon, ata yilach l'chu ha'kahal et kol sivivotenu ki l'chol ha'shor et yerek ha'sadeh. The Jews are going to come and swarm and swallow us up. They're going to destroy us. So here we have a report about how the nations feel about us and how do we feel? We feel that we are grasshoppers in their eyes. Where does reality lie? Reality is if God is helping us, we will conquer the land. Now, do we find these same types of ideas when we look at our sources? The Gemara that everyone knows, in source 10, it says, Miktash Rishom Neimach Harav, Yudnei Shloshad Dvarim, Shayuhubo, Avodazarav, Gila Rayot, Feshvichut Amim. Aval Miktash Sheni, Shayu Osukin, Bitorah, Uvimitzvot, Uvigimiluch Hasadim, Neimach Harav, Bnei Shatabo Sinat Chinam. The Lamdacha Sheshkula Sinat Chinam, Keneged Shalosh Averot, Avodazarav, Gila Shvichut Amim. So we're told that those three sins, whereby the first temple, and as we saw, are related perhaps to the Egel. But we see the second temple, it's Sinat Chinam. At least now we understand why or where there was Sinat Chinam in the sin of the spies. But where do we find these other elements? Or maybe, to phrase it a little differently, these elements of feeling like grasshoppers, or these elements of feeling very small, or feeling incapable, or not having a great deal of confidence. The most famous story that describes or discusses the Sinat Chinam, which is really the story, is known as the story of Kamtza and Bar Kamtza. Malki, do you know that I've never taught Kamtza and Bar Kamtza here? just figured everybody knows the story already, so why go back and say something that everybody knows? So everybody knows the story of Kamsa and Bar Kamsa. So let's read it anyway. Source 16. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Akamtza ubarakamtza charuv Yerushalayim. Jerusalem was destroyed because of Akamtza and Barakamtza. Hahu Gavra, there was a man, which by the way, the real, I don't want to use too strong of a word, but the person who was really ill-mannered, he escapes, and we don't know his name. And the sources also ask us, what did Kamsa do? Kamsa also is not involved in the whole story. I'll come back to that. It's Bar Kamsa and the guy who was the Baal HaBayit. Ahu Gavra Dirachame Kamsa. There was once a man who had a friend named Kamsa. Ubal Dvave Bar Kamsa. And he had an enemy named Bar Kamsa. Avad Seudata. He made a festive meal. Amrle Lishmaye, he asked one of his servants, Zil Aite Li Kamsa. Please go and invite Kamsa to come. Azal Aite Le Bar Kamsa. And it sounds like a comedy of errors almost. He goes and he invites Bar Kamsa. Ota, he comes, Ashkeche de Havayotiv, and he sees that he's sitting there. This is referring back to the Baal HaBayit. Amrle Michti Ahu Gavra, Baal Dibavava. The Baal HaBayit says to the guy that he can't stand, what are you doing here? Kum, puk, get up, leave. Amr, hoil va'ati, since I've already come, shavkan, let me remain, v'yavina lach d'mei ma'ad achlina v'shitina. Let me give you the money of whatever I eat or drink. Amr le, lo. The guy says no. Amr le, yavina lach d'mei palga d'sudatach. Let me pay you half the expenses of the entire meal. Amar le lo. He said no. Amar lo yavina lach d'me kula sudatech. Let me pay the money of the entire meal. Amar le lo. He says no. Nachte biyode. He grabs him by his hands. V'ukme v'afke. He takes him and he throws him out. By the way, is this sinat chinam? Not yet. Well, we don't know why he hates him. We don't know the background. We don't know the background to the story. It could be a very good reason. But my point is, we don't know yet if it's sinat chinam. We don't know if it's sina, which is just. We don't know. He thought he was being invited by his enemy. So he thought that maybe the guy was making up. Maybe the guy we wanted it for meal. Amar, hoil v'havu yotzvei rabbanan v'lo michu bei. He says, because there were rabbis who were sitting around. Don't worry, it always comes back to the rabbis. Because there were rabbis who were sitting around and did not protest. Shma mina, I can conclude from that. Konichalahu. They agreed with this decision. Ezel, Echubar, Kurtza, Beimalka. He goes, he makes his way to the palace. Amrle le Kesar. He says to the Caesar, Mordu boch, bocha Yehudai. The Jews are rebelling against you. Amrle miyemar. He said, who said? Amrle shadar lo korban. He says, send them a korban. Send them an offering. Chazet ima korvinan lay. Let's see if they bring your offering. Azel shadar biyadei, egla tilta. He sends a very special type of egel. Bahadei de ka'ati, but when he was on the way, shadi be muma beniv svatayim. He made a mum, a blemish, either in its gum, which would be very interesting in terms of lashon hara and so on, for amule bidukin sheba'ayin. And some say, no, it was really something in the eye. Something which, in the white of the eye, which in terms of Jewish law, halacha, is considered to be a blemish, but in terms of the law of the Caesar, was not. Now the rabbis have a problem. Apparently they know exactly what has happened. Savar Rabbanan Lekruve, Mishum Shalom Alchut. The rabbi said, you know what? Maybe we should just overlook the blemish and bring the offering because of peace with the government. Amr Luhu Rabbi Zachariah ben Avkilas, Yomru Bali Mumun Kraven Lagabi Mizbeach. People will then say that you're allowed to bring offerings with blemishes. Savr lemiktile. Some people say, then let's kill this Bar Kamtza, because he's causing an incredible problem here. If he gets back and keeps working this thing up, Jews will be killed. Let's take action against him. So I guess it was all the liberals said, bring the blemish, and all the right-wingers said, let's kill him. But everybody had a solution. But then he said, "Lo leizu v'leime." Therefore, he won't be able to go back. People will then think that the halacha is that just because you made a blemish on a korban, you should be killed. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Remember, Rabbi Yochanan began the whole teaching in the beginning. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, an v'tunuto sh'Rabbi Zachariah ben Avikalus hechriva et beitenu v'sorfa et chichalenu v'glitanu me'artzenu. The modesty of this Rabbi Zachariah destroyed the Beit HaMikdash, caused the Heichel to be burnt, and caused us to be chased out of our land. Now that's a very interesting conclusion, because wouldn't you have wanted to blame the Balabayit, or Bar Kamtza, or even Kamtza? But over here we see, as I said before, that the rabbis are to blame. By the way, in the version in Eicha Rabbah, the same Rabbi Zachariah was the rabbi who was at the meal and the one who didn't say anything. Now, in order to understand the story properly, for that matter, to understand any story properly, you need to have a little bit of insight into the characters. Unfortunately, we don't have that much insight or that much information. Rashi in Source 17 tells us, Kamtza Ubar Kamtza, Kach Shem Shnei Yehudim. That was the name of two Jews, Kamtza and Bar Kamtza. David and Davidson. Rashi, I'm skipping a line, says, Av Tunuto Savlunoto Shesaval Etzev Lo Hargo. He had a lot of Savlanut. And you thought Savlanut was good. He understands Anava as Savlanut. That's how Rashi understands it. And therefore, people who learn this Gemara and don't get past Rashi, that will be the limit of the understanding. The Maharsha says something which, if I'm not mistaken, is the key to understanding the entire passage. Not only that, changes the complexion of the passage dramatically. Source 18, Va'amar, and it says, Ubal Debrei Bar Kamtza, the one who hated, his enemy's name was Bar Kamtza, Sip. Per bezeh shetchilat churban haya al davar sinat chinam kama shekatuv beperakam b'diyoma b'mikdashenu she'oskim b'torah v'mitzvot b'nei macharav n'sheya b'hem sinat chinam. So that we know already. And then where he continues, where it's underlined, he writes, Efshar shahaya zeh av ubno. The Kamtza and Bar Kamtza were a father and a son. And instead of saying that it was, as I suggested, David and Davidson, it's Kamtza and the son of Kamtza. So let's start all over again. There is our anonymous Balabayit who has a best friend. Who's his best friend? His name is Kamtza. He also has a sworn enemy. And who's his sworn enemy? His best friend's son. It does make it more interesting. So what happens when the best friend's son is invited to the party? So what's he thinking? It must be that my father has spoken to him. It must be that he smoothed things over. It must be that now we've achieved some kind of friendship. And you know what? Does he want the friendship? How do you know? Because he came to the party. So it means that he wants to make up. And then, when he finds out that this is all a ruse, because does he know there was a mistake in the invitations? What does the guy come and say? What are you doing here? Get out. And then he figures this is somebody's idea of a joke, and this is his father's best friend. And what's the next thought that passes his mind? My father is in on it. This is my father's best friend. My father hates me. Which means the hatred over here has a wonderful way of spreading. And if you explain the story the way I just now explained it, you're not all that different from the Jews who were crying in the tent that night, crying because God hates them. By the way, many, many years ago, one of the great teachers of Tanakh in Israel today, Rav Yoel ben Nun, wrote a long article, which I disagree with, and in one of my books I wrote why I disagree with him, but I'm going to quote him anyway. I'm not going to quote what I wrote, why I disagree, I'm going to quote him. The question that he tries to deal with is an old question, which was publicized by the Ramban. All those years when Yosef was alone, why didn't Yosef ever try to contact his father? And Rav Yoel ben Nun wrote, again, this is 30 years ago, he wrote an article and he said, Yosef thought that his father was in on it. Because why would Yosef's father send him to his brothers who can't stand him, who then grab him and send him away? And why does his father never look for him? He doesn't know that his father thinks that he's dead. Which means all those years, and let's even be more careful, all those years of this galut which took place, because Yosef was in position to contact his father before. Yosef, the Ramban asked the question, as soon as it says in the verse that Yosef was placed in charge of everything in Potiphar's house, at that moment he could have sent a message to his father, and that's what the Ramban asked, why doesn't he contact his father? And the Ramban has a whole answer, and other Rishonim have answers, the Rash Mishans and others, the Rishonim and Achronim have grappled with this, and Rav Yoel ben Nun says, it's very simple, Yosef thought his father hated him. And his father wanted to get rid of him. He made enough trouble. He spoke about his brothers. He caused there to be a fight. And there was precedent in the family. Yishmael was sent away. There's precedent. And there, the tragedy of Yosef being rejected by his brothers is one thing. But for Yosef to be sitting all those years thinking that his father hated him as well is overpowering. And now we find that this man, Bar Kamtza, because otherwise his whole reaction is very strange. So there's this idiot who can't stand him, who told him to come to a party and threw him out of a party. So why should he therefore try to destroy the entire Jewish people? That's a little overreaction, isn't it? I mean, I can make many suggestions what he can do to get back at this particular guy. But what would cause somebody just to say, forget about it? Forget about all of them. Forget about everyone. The rabbis were there and didn't care. That tells you one thing. But I think in his mind it was much more than that. He thinks that his father Kamtza is involved. And by the way, why does poor Kamtza get dragged into this? What did Kamtza do? Maybe Kamtza should not have been best friends with a guy who couldn't stand his son. Maybe Kamtza shouldn't have been best friends with a guy who would take somebody and throw him out of his party. Maybe Kamtza shouldn't have tolerated a situation that had existed. So as I said, we now can see a lot more. But the part of the story that we're still a little bit troubled with is what we're told at the end. It was the modesty of Rabbi Zachariah. So what exactly is this modesty? The Chatam Sofer, and I'll quote two sources in 19 and 20. The Chatam Sofer in 19 does a very interesting analysis. He says in the beginning, "Ma'ay dechtiv ashrei adam v'chule shamati mipi." This is which is the verse quoted in the beginning of this story of Kamtza Bar Kamtza. Shamati pi harav hakadol morenu v'rabenu harav Yaakov virmizes atzal. Frankfurt Main. By the way, the Chatam Sofer, or the Chasam Sofer, even though he was the most well-known rabbi in Hungary the last 200 years, grew up in Frankfurt and was a proper German Jew before he got to Hungary. So he says he heard in Frankfurt. So when he says he heard in Frankfurt, this is first he heard it. An explanation, a Hadam of Yochanan, Shabbat, lo chorviu, that's what says in the Gemara in Shabbat, lo chorviu shalim el shemidu dinim al din Torah. Uvperka kamad yuma amar Rabbi Yochanan, lo chorviu shalim el sanat chinam. We find Rabbi Yochanan quoted in two different Gemarot. On the one hand, Rabbi Yochanan is quoted in Gemara Shabbat saying, why was Yerushalayim destroyed? Because they treated the law according to the letter of the law and not beyond the letter of the law. On the other hand, Rabbi Yochanan says, why is it destroyed? Because of Sinat Chinam. So how can it both be? And he says, Afagav deyesh lomar habayit rishon v'habayit sheni. Even though you can attempt to say that maybe one was by rishon v'habayit sheni, mikol makom nearly, al pidi Rabbi Yochanan dahacha dakol emet. He goes, it seems to me that no, that it's really both of them are true. And he goes a little bit into the Kamtza, Bar Kamtza, but then if we skip a little bit where it's underlined again, he writes, V'nei b'shat kishlunam sheYisrael nechshelu ahedyotim b'sinat chinam, v'chachmei Yisrael nechshelu b'madat dinam al din Torah. Says, it depends who you're talking about. Am Yisrael were guilty of sinat chinam. The rabbis were guilty of judging according to the letter of the law. Now, I believe that there's a common denominator between the two, but let's look at the other comment of the Chatam Sofer. Here he's dealing with the modesty of Rabbi Zechariah. And he tells us right away that Rashi understands that anvatunato is really savlunato. Now, let me tell you one more thing about this Rabbi Zechariah. He's only quoted in one other Gemara, if I'm not mistaken. There's only one other source in all of Shas that quotes him. That source is in source 21, which apparently has nothing to do with anything. It talks about a problem called muktzah and how you get rid of your garbage on Shabbat. Rav Sheshet Zoriklo hu belishnei, Rav Papa Zoriklo achurei amita, Amur lavala Rav Zechariah ben Avkulis shahaya machzir panov achurei amita v'zorkan. Which, if you need me to translate this and tell you exactly what he did, when he was eating his chicken bones, instead of touching them because maybe they're muks afterwards, he turned around in back of the couch that they were eating on and spit it in, out in back of the couch. I hope you don't think any less of him. That's the only other Gemara that he's quoted in. It's Muksa. That's the only other Gemara he's quoted in. Chavit Shabbos. But it's worse than that. Because even though this is the only Gemara, we find that this source is quoted in the Tosefta as well. And when we read in the Tosefta, we will be confounded. Source 22. And then we'll come back to the Chatam Sofer. Beit Hillel Omer Magbihin me al hashulchan atzamot v'klipin. What did Beit Hillel say you do when you finished eating? All your bones are muktza, right? So what does he say you do? You pick them up and you put them in the garbage. That's what Beit Hillel says. Beit Shammai omer misalik et tavla kula. He says you'll take up the whole thing which they're sitting on, right? The whole table. Imagine a breakfast in bed kind of with a big tray. So he says you'll remove the whole tray and the thing will be on the tray and you'll take the... That's what Beit Shammai says. V'na'ara, then you'll shake it out. Zechariah ben Avkilas, by the way, it's interesting, it didn't call him rabbi here. Zechariah ben Avkilas, lo ha'yanohe glo kidivrei Beit Shammai, that's how Shammai spelled in the Tosefta, v'lo kidivrei Beit Hillel, he wouldn't follow either of them. Elenotel umashlich la'achar hamita. He wouldn't even put it down. He would turn around and spit it in back. Which means he actually had sources he could have followed, namely Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. And now listen to the conclusion of the Tosefta. Omer Rabbi Yosa, anvutunato Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkilas hayasarfa tahechel. His behavior destroyed the Beit HaMikdash. What does that have to do with muktza? What does that have to do with muktza? I looked up in Professor Lieberman's commentary on the Tosefta, and he said absolutely this is because of this behavior in this case that he wasn't willing to follow the opinions. Because why? He was worried what people would say. That if he follows Beis Hillel, then all the Beis Shammai people will say, why are you following that? If he follows Beis Shammai, then all the Beis Hillel people will say, why are you doing like that? And he was afraid either way to deal with the problem. So he turned around and he solved the problem by not having the problem in the first place. And the muktzah never made it to the table. He turned around and spit it behind the couch. Probably never occurred to him. But this is amazing. Because if we're not mistaken, the Tosefta over here is not talking about Kamtza and Bar Kamtza. It's talking about a technical thing in terms of Muktza, but it's talking about an approach to Halacha. The Chatam Sofer, now we'll go back in Source 20. He says, Rashi tells us the Savlanut, but Tosefta Perik Yud Zayin, the Masechet Shabbat, Beit Shammai Omer Magbin Me'al Shulchan Atzamot V'Klipot Beit Hillel Omer Magbin Atavla Kula, which, by the way, he has a reverse tradition of Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, which a number of the Rishonim and Achronim had. According to this way, Beit Hillel is more Machmen than Beit Shammai, which is why some reversed it. I'm not getting involved. Do research and you'll find out what the proper text is.
And he quotes Anvunatosha Rabbi Zachari ben Avkulos Sarfa Hechel Al Kain Ayn Sham Vuhu Tamua. The whole thing is strange. Gam Perish Rashi Anvunato Savlunato Nearly Need Daiti Had the Amr of Zachari Yamur Metil Mum Bekad Shem Chayv Mita O Yimu Bali Mum Karav Lagabi Mizbeach Ikuch Shashato Hayab Bnei Chilul Hashem. Meaning, back in our Gemara, when it says he didn't want to take either action, either by bringing the offering or by killing the person who's making all the trouble by Kamtza, he goes, what's the problem? Everybody knows that you don't kill people because they want to bring them home. Everybody would understand it's an extraordinary case. Now listen to the way the Chatam Sofer finishes up, and he writes, Achrab Zachari ben Avkulot Sayas Savlan Gadol. He had a great deal of patience, even too much. And I've read this over 4 or 5 times, and everything makes sense to this last line in the Chatam Sofer. The Chatam Sofer is trying to reconcile his aniva with the savlanut that Rashi explains to us. And therefore, somehow he's trying to say that he had a great deal of savlanut. Maybe he imagines that he was able, therefore, to keep the bones around and it didn't bother him at all. And it doesn't bother me, so then maybe I can stay that way till after Shabbat, and so on and so forth. But without trying, you can try to figure out, but without us trying anymore to figure out what the Chatam Sofer is trying to say, I'd prefer to take a look at what the Maritz Chias says in his explanation of this Gemara, in Source 23. By the way, the Maritz Chias was attacked generally by the Chatam Sofer for being too liberal and so on. But we'll see soon who else quotes this Maritz Chias. The Tzvi Hirsch Chias. V'ulam b'nei, Source 23, V'ulam b'nei godo anvutunato shorb Zacharia ben Avkulos lo hirhiv ben Avsho oz לעשות בזה הלכה למעשה. וחשש שיחשדו אותו שעשר של הלכה. Because of his modesty, he's afraid that people would think that he didn't do what was right. ולא החשיב עצמו לגדול לקבור בדעתו להיות עושה הלכה למעשה ולתלות בלרת שעה. And he was afraid that people, that he saw himself as being too small. How could he make such big decisions? V'chishav ki adavar nimsa rak l'gdol ha'adar. That only the great rabbis are able to make such decisions. For who ain't a ra'uy lezeh lasot gedolot, and he's not able to make such big decisions shelo kitara against normative halacha ulutzlot ki oseh leman legader gedul lamod beferetz, or to do something in order to stop a pirtza, to stop something which is very bad about to take place, namely that the Caesar is going to think the Jews are rebelling. Umneizeh amru lashon an v'tunato haynu b'mas shelo ratza la'amod al da'ato zot haita hasiba l'chor ben habayit. That he did not want to stand up for what he believed in. That's the reason the Churban took place. But what he's saying is the core is he saw himself as being too small. And by the way, in case, again, you don't necessarily know who Rav Tzvi Hirsch Chias was, or if you do find out who he was, and you think, okay, maybe he was a little too liberal and so on. And source 24, and this is the only one I kept. I collected a bunch of these, but this is the only one I kept for today. A tshuva written by Rav Moshe Feinstein. I don't know if I'll be nice and tell you what the tshuva is about or not. But this is not the first and not the second. It's the third one in a row that he writes to the same person who attacks him terribly for being too liberal. By the way, Rav Moshe wrote this tshuva in 1936. His first volume of tshuva weren't published till 1959. And when he published them, he made sure to include this one. He was talking about a woman going to the mikveh if she had cotton balls in her ear. Umasha katuv yedidi ech reshaim anu lesmocha chidushim ke'ilu shebi'arati lemase ubefrat yehu neged eza achron. He goes, on that which you're upset with me, and you say, how does a rabbi have the right to go against something that some achron, some later rabbi had said, hineni omer v'chikfar nasa keitz v'gvul l'tarachas v'shalom? That's it, Torah's over? That only things that are written are what you're allowed to do. And if new questions come up, we're not allowed to answer them. And Rav Moshe adds in 1936, when he's a young man, even if I know what the right answer is, I can't answer because no one said it before me. Vaday l'nitayti asur lomer kein. You're not allowed to say such a thing. Devaday od yagdil Torah. The Torah will grow. Gam atabiz manenu umchuyav kol misha biyado lahachruya kol din sheyavol liyado kefi haefshar lo bechakira v'drisha hitev b'shasu poskim b'avanai sheira uvoryot nechonot af shehu din chadash shelo divru odato b'sfarim. He's very clear what he says. He's strong and he limits it. He goes, anybody today who is capable in Shas and Poskim and understands what's going on, has an obligation to answer. We'll skip to where it's underlined. And if your conclusion is against what other great rabbis have said, Mabikach, which the best way to translate that is, so what? Havada shirishaim af anu lechlok ala achronim vigam lefamim al ezer rishonim kishayesh ra'yot nechonot. And we can even argue with some rishonim if we have good proofs for it. Vayikar gam b'ta'amim nechonim v'al kiyotze b'zeh amru ein l'dayin el mash einin ra'ot. He doesn't think we're allowed to do this, by the way. He thinks we're obligated to do it. And then we'll get to the last paragraph. Ach ein liot gas b'hora'a v'tzarech lemnor kishefshar avamakom tzarech gadol v'kol shkein b'makon igun ke'uvda zu. He calls this case a case of aguna. This is not real aguna. Unfortunately, Rav Moshe will deal with thousands of cases of agunot afterwards. In 1936, he's dealing with the case of igun of a woman who will have a hard time going to the mikveh. Vaday mechuyavim gam anachnu lahorot im rak nir'el lanu lehetir va'asur lanu liot meha onuyim ula again bat Yisrael ula grom lahachshil b'yisurim, that we have no right to cause her suffering and we have no right to cause her to break halachot. Ho afrak lafsid mamon Yisrael, and even we have no right to cause Jews to spend too much money when certain cases come up where the rabbi says, no, be machmir. Va'ayin begitin daf nun vav anvunato sharav Zachariah ben Avkulis hichriva et beitenu shakosha lama amar anvunato mashayich zela anava va'ayin b'martzchias davar nachon He says, what does it have to do with his modesty? He goes, no, look at the Maritzchias. He's right what he says there. V'gam zeh mamash ki yotzeh muchachin anu lahorot gam lama'aseh ki shenir elanu b'ra'ayot uv'avana yishera u'befrat b'makom igun kazeh u'latziyu mimichshul kazeh. Rav Moshe comes out saying, what was the problem? It was a rabbi who was unwilling to give a psak. It was a rabbi who knew what was right, but what was the problem? He worried what people would say. He worried that they would put his name up on the walls and say that this person's allowing so and so. And Rav Moshe says, that's what destroyed the Beit HaMikdash. And now if you think about the whole story of Kamtsa Erban Karmsa, it's dealing with people who all of them, for some reason, feel inadequate. We have Bar Kamtsa who thinks his father hates him. We have Reb Zachariah who worries what people will say. And I want to still answer why the story is called the story of Kamtsa and Bar Kamtsa. Source 25, the Maharal. He starts off, this is in Netzach Yisrael, and he writes, Va'amar ki kol echad charav al yedei inyan ha-ra'uri ki b'shvil sinat chinam necharav Yerushalayim. The Jerusalem was destroyed because of sinat chinam, because of hatred. Zed pa'er b'perek shli zed, b'arichut, it's explained later on, Gemara Gittin. Ki adei b'et mikdash Yerushalayim naseh kol Yisrael ki ish echad. That the Beit HaMikdash, what it does, is it makes us one. It causes unity. L'fi sh'ayel ha-mizbeach echad. V'lo yirisha'im levnot kol echad v'echad b'ma la'atzmo. Ad sh'al yedei Beit HaMikdash ha-Yisrael la'am echad. That the secret of the Beit HaMikdash and the Mizbeach, that it caused the Jews to be one people. V'l'fi chachay yedei sinat chinam shal kamtsa nechrevah ha'ir v'amikdash. And therefore, because of the sinat chinam of kamtsa, and by the way, you should correct it. It's not Kamtsa, it's Bar Kamtsa. Don't worry, he knows what he's talking about. V'ka'asher tiddaktek b'lashon Kamtsa. If you pay attention to the name Kamtsa, ki ha'shem hazeh mora chaluk shekarei Kamtsa al shem hachiluk v'apirud. That the name Kamtsa has to do with separation. And then he tells us something fascinating. Go down a little bit where it's fast, where it's underlined. Uvlashon chachamim nikra hachagav kamtsa. That a grasshopper is called a kamtsa. V'targum onkelus v'nihi be'einenu kechagavim. That we were like grasshoppers in their eyes. If you look at the targum, I have it there for you in the bottom in source 26. Vavina be'einen nafshina kekamtsin. We will be like grasshoppers in their eyes. Which means the whole outlook on life, of seeing things from a very narrow, very small perspective, is a perspective of Kamtsa and Bar Kamtsa, or the plural is Kamtsin. Now how interesting is it that that's where we saw was the beginning of the projection. When people said, they will see us, they saw us as grasshoppers. What made us think that they saw us as grasshoppers? Because we saw ourselves as grasshoppers. And if our self-perception is that we're so small and so incapable, we become small and incapable. And that's what ended up affecting the people who felt, if we really are so small and so incapable, then why would God put us in this situation? It must be that God hates us. And if God hates us, obviously He wants to destroy us. Well, what is the reality? The reality is quite the opposite. But this attack against smallness, we now understand. And again, it's not just me saying it. We understand from Rav Moshe Feinstein. We understand from the Chasam Sofer. We understand from the Maritz Chias. This Zechariah ben Avkilos, he couldn't make a decision. Should I rule like Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai by law of Muktzah in his own house? He was too scared to do anything because he was worried what people would say about him. He was too modest to be able to make a decision. And when our leaders, when our rabbis, are too modest to deal with the problems which exist, we end up with a generation which is in incredible pain.
That's what destroyed Yerushalayim. It's people feeling small, and that results in projection and sinat chinam, and leaders feeling small, and that resulted in the whole thing shutting down. Halacha stopping. But what's the reality? The reality is we're not like grasshoppers. The reality is that we are the children of Avraham and Yitzchak and Yaakov. And the reality is that God made a brit bein haptarim. And the reality is that God promised us the land. And the reality is that God was going to take us to that land. We just had to believe in it. And we stand today and we're frightened because some of the problems that we now understand are in that text telling us why Yerushalayim was destroyed still exist today. And there are very capable rabbis who at times are afraid of saying anything, and they'll tell you they're afraid. They're afraid to publish their sfarim to all their children are married. You won't get a good shidduch. They're afraid of saying things because then the lunatic fringe will attack them. And we have to understand that we, Am Yisrael, are not grasshoppers. We are incredibly capable. But not only are we capable, we have a bracha, and God is with us, and God loves us. And any time we get those feelings of fear and those feelings of depression, and we see ourselves as being very small, we have to realize that's not the case. We cannot allow our projection to cause us to have a very bizarre worldview. We need to see things as they really are. But part of how things really are is that key element which caused all the sinat chinam that happened afterwards and caused the rabbis to be unable to act. They thought that God hated them. We need to repeat to ourselves day after day that God loves us. He gathered us from the four corners of the earth. He brought us back to Eretz Yisrael. He gave us a wonderful land, and we are incredibly capable people. Maybe we need to give our leaders a little bit more confidence. Maybe we need to let them know that we are with them. Maybe we need to ask them the right questions. Maybe we need to give them the confidence of not to be afraid. We realize now that when you think of yourself as a grasshopper, what you're thinking of yourself is as kamtza and bar kamtza. And that was the starting point of the lie, or at least the misperception of the Meraglim. And that's the point that we need to grab and to turn it around and to realize that we are the children of the covenant who stood at Har Sinai. We are incredibly capable, and Be'ezrat Hashem, we'll be able to make all of the positive promises from the Nevuot come true, and hopefully by next year, Tisha B'Av will be a holiday.